This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Don't have my tree up yet, but it's going to happen this weekend.
Yeah, and lights outside.
Got to do it. Don't be pushing it. Tree will be good.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli, with the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, soon to be the coach of the Washington Redskins, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mikey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I mean, hey, you couldn't do much worse, right?
That was a good sports reference for you, man.
How about
just
that?
Just picking it up.
I saw like some one-line headline on my Washington Post headlines email today.
Okay,
something
you're not
about Redskins being in a tailspin.
Okay, so it wasn't as impressive after you shared that tidbit.
Okay, but I do want you to know that we had a very special ceremony at Nico's Waldorf preschool. This is the sort of back to the earth preschool that we send them to, and it was for the Midwinter Garden. It was a special candlelit ceremony, and they walk around in a circle, and there's all kinds of nature things, But he insisted on wearing his Redskins shirt, which, as we've discussed before, is actually Kansas City Chiefs shirt. But he doesn't know that, and neither did I, that he wanted to wear that to the ceremony. So it was great as he did the spiral. There he was, number 31, Nico Petrilli. It's very cute. All the other kids were natural fibers.
Wow. Actually, you know, and Mike, what'll work for you is, you know, a number of athletes, Redskins included, Twitter nowadays.
Ah.
So rather than actually watch ball games.
Yeah.
You can kind of track Redskin news on Twitter, I'm sure.
That's not a bad idea. I might do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Well, speaking of Twitter, I am on Twitter, and so is all your staff. You have all your staff. All they do all day long is they send tweets about your stuff that you write. It's really kind of butt kissing, Rick.
Okay. But they don't write negative things about my stuff?
No. That's
sweet.
The problem. It's all glowingly positive.
Well,
that would be more interesting if they were like. I tweeted something for you today, though, baby.
Did you?
I said Rick Hess speaks Greek.
Huh?
Because you talked in your blog post about the Greeks.
Oh, right.
About the ancient Greeks paying more for kindergarten teachers than first grade teachers. I don't know where you dug that one.
Or something like that.
Hope you didn't make that one up, Rick.
Baby. Footnotes and everything.
All right. Okay. Lots to cover today. Lots of education news this week. Let's get started, Janie, with Pardon the Gadfly.
On Tuesday, results of the 2009 PISA test were published. Participating in the International Reading, Math, and Science Assessment for the first time, Shanghai posted results which blew everyone else out of the water. Should we be concerned?
The Shanghai surprise, Rick. And by the way, this came out on Pearl Harbor Day. A coincidence?
I didn't know Shanghai was a country.
Well, that's right. It's very good. It's not. Nor is Japan. But it's, you know, it's an Asian superpower rising to take us over. Look, let's be honest here. We're actually taping this on Monday. We've seen the results ahead of time because we are in the know. But we haven't yet gotten to see what the reaction is. So by the time the podcast comes out, I don't know. I suspect this will have created a huge firestorm that we would have heard statements from world leaders all over the world that this is going to freak people out that Shanghai, not China, but Shanghai is beating the rest of the world.
Hmm.
Don't you think so?
Maybe.
The next Sputnik? I mean, look, this fits into the storyline that here is America. You know, we're on this long, slow decline, and China is rising and fast. They're going to out-educate us. We're destined to be their lackeys 50 years from now.
Well, we're going to be their lackeys 50 years from now because we spend tons of money we don't have, and we've got to borrow it all from them. And when the bankers
perhaps
come to repossess.
Perhaps because we're not so good at math. We're reading things like mortgage documents.
So who else rounded out the top three on PISA?
Oh, who else came in high? You know, the usual ones, Hong Kong, Finland, Liechtenstein, you know, those sorts of the perennials.
The perennials.
The Korea, Taipei, I think, which, again.
Now, how did PISA even agree to administer it just in Shanghai without China participating?
I don't know these things. You're supposed to offer your own informed opinion here. I mean, is this something? Look, so there's going to be a big outcry about this. Should there not be? I mean, should we care about these tests? Do they mean anything?
Well, Mark Schneider says that PISA is just a fundamentally flawed assessment to begin with.
Right.
And I think Mark's a bright guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only administering this in the capital city of a nation which has relatively restricted, culture in terms of where people can live. And how confident are we that this was actually you know, administered accurately and fairly in China?
Well, what Mark does say in an International Herald Tribune article is that, you know, look, you know, in China, they make it clear to these kids, hey, you know, you're going to work hard on this test because it's going to really be important for how the world sees our country. You know, imagine if kids in Iowa were given those same instructions. They'd probably be like, what? Yeah, okay, whatever. All right, next topic.
Michelle Rhee recently announced her next much-anticipated project. She's founding a new advocacy group called Student First, aimed at building a national movement to defend the interests of children in public education. What do you think? Is this the right move for the ousted D.C. school's chancellor?
You know, before we weigh in on that, I think that we should take this opportunity for Rick and I to announce our new organization. It's called Policy Wonks First.
I've always said we needed to unionize.
You have.
Because you know what happens is Mike, because he's a nice guy, jets around the country trying to make a difference just because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it really sets a high bar for the rest of us.
Yeah. Rick's trying to charge $1 billion and I give the milk away for free. All right, Rick. So what do you think? Our friend Michelle Rhee, new organization. She wants to raise $1 billion for advocacy stuff. That is non-tax deductible money. That's political money she wants to raise. And she wants to have 1 million followers, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, that's correct. I mean, $1 billion. I mean, now at that point, you're going toe-to-toe against folks who are contributing to, you know, candidates for office, the Republican and Democratic campaign committees. I mean, that's a lot of money she set out to raise.
Yeah. So what's your take here? I mean, is this do we need this? Is this she filling a niche that's right now empty? I mean, don't we already have Democrats for Education Reform, Stand for Children? I mean, there are people out there doing this political organizing already.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know exactly what she's thinking. I do think that by far the best move out of the gate was that I had heard rumors that they were toying with naming the organization Students Last. And I think going Students First was definitely the right call.
Okay. I made that joke like a minute ago, Rick.
Did you?
Well, sort of. The Students First joke. Yeah.
I missed it.
Here's another joke. You know what they should call this group? Instead of Democrats for Education Reform, they should call it Republicans for Education Reform. R-E-H-E-E. Boom.
Boom. I like it. So, look, I mean, the thing is that you've got Democrats for Ed Reform. You've got the kind of pie net groups of the states. You know, what you don't have is anybody who's actually going toe-to-toe with the unions in municipal elections, you know, in a Chicago or an L.A. or a D.C. over a school board fight or a mayoral contest. You know, if that's what Rhee has in mind and if she can actually pull together the kinds of, you know, million folks enlisted in an organization that she's aiming for, and they're tracking zip codes and the rest, and they got a big, deep war chest. Sure, it could actually have a really interesting impact. The trick is for her to actually, you know, get those kinds of resources in place.
Okay, good. Topic number three, Janie.
Before we get there, Mike, I just have to say, you didn't take that joke one step further, because then it would have to be called reefer, which I don't think is the correct imagery that they're going for there. Just want to put that out there.
Well, maybe that was just what I was trying to say about the idea in general.
Okay.
Aw. Right. Hey, by the way, have you seen Whitmire's new book on her?
No.
Did you see the title?
Yeah, The Bee Eater.
The Bee Eater.
Yeah.
I got to say, did you know the bee story?
No, I didn't know the bee story.
I know the bee story. I got to say, that's a pretty... I'm surprised that this publisher went for that title.
Yeah.
Because when nobody knows what the hell your book's about,
yeah,
it makes
so,
it harder
so
to
So background,
sell.
The book on Michelle Rhee called The Bee Eater because when she was a TFA teacher in Baltimore, there was some bee buzzing around her room and it was distracting the kids. And so she supposedly went and grabbed it and ate the bee. Yeah, this will work well in the movie version.
But not as well as the title for a book.
Okay. Topic number three, Janie.
As a new LA Times analysis has demonstrated, last hired, first fired is bad for students. Now what?
I think Michelle Rhee ought to do something about this.
I think that's a good
idea. Students first, Rick.
Heck yeah. Although... How did the LA Times demonstrate this other than the fact that we already knew it?
Well, all right. So what they did is my understanding, because I haven't actually read the article yet, is that they, but I'm inferring from the headlines and the tweets I saw about it, is that I shouldn't admit this, should I? Don't even think about me reading your book, by the way, Rick. You need to send it out one tweet at a time and I'll get to it. All right. What they do is, you know, they got this database of teacher effectiveness and they looked and see the teachers that got laid off in the latest round because of the budget cuts. And they were able to show that a lot of those were effective teachers and that those teachers were by and large teaching in poor schools. Not surprisingly, because they were young teachers who were sent to those schools that didn't have any other teachers to teach them. Huh. Is that about right, Janie?
Yep, I think that's about right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right, so now that we've explained it.
It's amazing how much information you can convey in a tweet. I like it.
Oh, yeah. You can pick up a lot, right? This is the core equity argument, right? I mean, there's always been this thing about, hey, you know, those teachers are getting protected and it's not fair. But now you're saying, look, we are laying off the teachers that are teaching the poorest kids, including many teachers are doing a good job with those poor kids, now becomes a civil rights issue like the ACLU has been charging.
Huh. I mean, I guess, did anybody think that last hired, first fired was a good policy idea before this article?
Well, I don't know, but you haven't necessarily gotten people on the left fired up about it, right? I mean, I think this is another sign of the wedge between the teachers' unions and other advocates on the left, right? Is that, and that's why these equity arguments, even though sometimes we're not big fans of them, they are important because, you know, then if you're a well-read, educated, liberal intelligentsia, you know, you can't defend this stuff.
But I feel like Katie Haycock was going after last hired, first fired hard already. I mean, doing edgy jobs. I mean, she was slamming the administration for ducking on this, wasn't she?
Right. Well, sure.
But this is the civil rights left. No, you're right. And it's nice to have ammunition. Although I do worry. I mean, at the LA Times database, right, they have, what, the two grades worth of data for the... And is the comparison that these teachers are more effective than the teachers that were retained in those schools?
I think, yeah, they profiled at least one school that showed that, you know, about 50% of the teachers were laid off and they were effective teachers and more effective than the ones that remained and more effective than the ones that they were replaced with.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I guess it's good to illustrate this for parents and voters out there. Sure.
Very good.
Congrats to the LAT.
There you go. That's the attitude. Rick, sometimes I'm afraid you haven't been as compliant as I need you to be. But once, you know, the Education Gadfly show is bought by China, I think that your compliance will come right along.
Or Joel Klein.
Or Joel Klein. Hey, oh, by the way, it would not cost $400 million to buy us, like Wireless Generation.
That's right. I'm thinking dirt cheap, baby.
Yeah, I mean.
So this thing for what?
$100 million I'd go for. No problem.
Joel, if you're listening, I actually think you could probably get Mike down into the 3,000 to 4,000 range.
Okay, that's all the time we got for Part of the Gadfly. Nice plane. Janie, thank you. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Hello, Amber. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
You've been enjoying
always
the holiday
season. Always glad to be here.
So
I have. Don't have my tree up yet, but it's going to happen this weekend.
Yeah? And lights outside?
Got to do it. Don't be pushing it. Tree will be good.
Okay.
Maybe a wreath on the door. That's about as far as it goes.
I have to admit, I did the environmentally friendly lights last year. They really sucked. I mean, they just
what
don't
do they
look
do?
Good. They look kind of bluish, and they just have this sort of, they're just faint.
Are they like the fluorescent light bulbs? They take a while to brighten up?
Yeah, there's, I don't know.
So you're back to the non
so back to the old school ones. Yeah. I want to light it up for Christmas.
It's Christmas time.
Okay, Amber, what you got for us this week?
All right. So this week we have a new study released by the Tennessee State Board that examines the effectiveness of teacher training programs in that state. As you may know, Tennessee state law requires the state to develop a report card for teacher training programs. This is the third such report, but the first time that there have been sufficient data to include some of the alternative training programs, including TFA. The study is limited to beginning teachers, 1 to 3 years of experience, with a theory that other influences come into play once teachers get too far removed from their training. It's also limited to teachers teaching in the 4 state-tested subject areas. Analysts examine teacher effects in the highest and lowest quintiles relative to the statewide distribution, so we're looking just at the extreme ends here. Of the 42 programs examined, TFA was one of just a few training programs to consistently produce highly effective teachers based on student performance data in reading, science, and social studies. Vanderbilt's training program also produced highly effective teachers in math. Incidentally, Praxis passage rates do not differ among universities. Almost all have around a 97% to 98% passage rate. So, finally, cough this up as yet another study that does not bode well for teacher training as it occurs in education schools.
Okay, and you said that Praxis scores don't differentiate. You really mean Praxis passing rates, right? They weren't able to look at the actual Praxis scores of those teachers.
That's right, just the passage rates.
Because that, you would imagine, probably is related. That, you know, big part of what's going on here is that TFA is more selective, they've got
Because they don't look at that.
Teachers with higher IQs, and that's
and Vandy teachers aren't chopped liver either.
Correct. Right. I mean, it's about selectivity, right? Not necessarily about the preparation itself,
right,
but about the people they pick in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That's what one would think.
Rick, anything
I think that sounds likely. Although it's interesting whether or not, Praxis might not predict anything at all. Has anybody ever actually run like individual level Praxis data against teacher gain scores? If you're
about it, I feel like if anybody would have done that, Goldhaber would have done it. And I just don't remember off the top of my head, but I thought he did look at something like that in his North Carolina stuff.
Well, I mean that would be. I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence that Praxis tells you anything at all.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the question. Is it related to the general verbal test that they've used to show the link between general teacher intelligence and student outcomes? Yeah. But you know what? This doesn't, I mean, okay, we love TFA. I love TFA, but it doesn't really resolve the core issue, right? I mean, the people that are not crazy about TFA will say, well, sure, that's great, but most of them are gone in 2 or 3 years. So then what?
Well, and there are a handful, and don't ask me the name, but there were some that consistently, you know, also were producing these, you know, these gains. So there's something else going on other than selectivity. I mean, I feel like there are actually some real effects here. Hopefully somebody will dig in and kind of see what's going on in these 4 or 5 other training programs that are popping up with TFA and with Vandy. So I feel like, you know, I hope it's not as just as simple of a story as selectivity.
I think that Rick and I need to go on another fact-finding mission to Nashville, to Vanderbilt, to check out what's going on.
I like it, baby.
That's right. Last time we were on a fact-finding mission to Nashville, we had a good time.
It's a good place to find facts.
It is a good place to find facts.
So is Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes, indeed. You're right. I think there's a lot of potential here. All right. Speaking of music, what's on the agenda?
So since we're talking about Tennessee, we have Rocky Top Tennessee by the Dry Lake Band.
Once I had a boy on Rocky Top, half bear, the other half cat. Wild as a mink, but sweet as soda pop. I still dream about that. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee.
It's time for Chris Irvine's What's Up With That?
I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what up with that? What up with that? Yes, sir.
Hello, Chris. How you doing today?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Hey, bud.
Yes. So what are we talking about today?
Well, it was definitely no Tyson Holyfield, but did either of you happen to watch the big Gavin Spicer throwdown the Monday before Thanksgiving?
Who's Gavin Spicer?
Well, yeah, that's, you know, probably neither, because it wasn't on ESPN and it wasn't on HBO either. The reason, Rick, you might not have heard of boxers Tom Gavin or Steven Spicer before is because they're, in fact, not boxers at all.
Oh.
They're the co-principals at Hudson High School in Hudson, New York. The incident I'm referring to occurred at the Board of Education meeting on Monday, November 22nd. Co-Principal Spicer called for the school to more thoroughly enforce the code of conduct following a week of mayhem, including group fights, suspensions, superintendent's hearings, and even one all-school lockdown. Co-Principal Gavin then erupted, sticking his finger in Spicer's face and saying, quote, "What the hell were you telling those people I wasn't enforcing the code of conduct for?" When Spicer explained, Gavin told him that, quote, "I'll give you a code of conduct." The confrontation eventually had to be broken up by the Hudson Police Commissioner. So should it be a surprise at all that teachers are having a hard time keeping students in line in a school where a co-principal is unable to resolve his differences with words? I mean, what did this overly aggressive alpha male think he would prove through his actions? Was the Board of Ed ready to endorse a no-holds-barred winner-take-all contest for the sole ownership of the principal title? I don't think so. Once again, we have a prime example of an individual who has clearly reached a higher rank than he deserves, adversely affecting hundreds, if not thousands, of teachers and students as a result. While co-principal Gavin was suspended, the Hudson Board of Education needs to think long and hard before allowing him back into a managerial position. A principal physically confronting a colleague at a public board meeting. What's up with that?
So there's a clear policy takeaway from this, Rick, and it comes to the word co principal. Whose idea was that? What's up with that, Chris?
No kidding, man. So much for accountability, huh?
Yeah, co-principal. I don't know. You know, so speaking of school board members, you know, Peter Meyer, who blogs for us at Flypaper and was an editor at Education Next, this is his school district that he is on the board of. And yes, it seems like at Hudson, up there in Hudson, New York, there's all kinds of challenges.
So the principal, well, the one co-principal was admittedly not enforcing the code of conduct and then was frustrated the other guy mentioned it?
Yes.
Wow. What's up with that?
What's up with that? But seriously, I mean, co-principals, is this something happening out there that we don't know about?
I don't know.
Is this like a trend or something?
New York City leadership model, isn't it?
Why?
Co-superintendents, kind of.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that's right.
Package deals, blah, blah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Ugh. Right. Yeah. I've often suggested to Checker that we'd be co-presidents, and so far he hasn't gone for that.
You can be co-pilots.
Co-pilots. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's a pretty good one, Chris. Keep it coming. Keep it up. We'll have to see. I have a feeling that the holidays will provide plenty of things for you to come
on.
There always are some good stories this time of year of craziness and silliness out there. But we will track the serious things, Rick, the school reform happenings. People can come right here and they can count on us every week. So, until next week,
I'm again.
I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.